We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is UMass Basketball.
Weeks, wide open three. He'll take it empty.
Let's get real.
I know this. I'm the most animated coach that you've probably ever seen.
Cross will score again. Career high and growing for Matt Cross at 26.
Hey, he's just being frank.
You're either a good player or you're a talented player. If you're a talented player, it means you're good on offense. If you're a good player, that means you play to win.
And the ball movement for the Minutemen, spot on that possession.
Now, along with UMass basketball head coach Frank Martin, here's the voice of the Minutemen, Jay Burnham.
That's right. Welcome into Just Being Frank, our inaugural episode, a show that we're going to have talking about UMass basketball, basketball in general, the athletic world, and pretty much whatever's on head coach Frank Martin's mind. Coach, good morning. How you doing? Good to see you.
Oh, Jay, doing great and super excited, man. This is an area that I'm not this is new to me, but it's kind of the way of the world now to share messages and share opinions and probably create a narrative, not a narrative, but tell UMass people what it's about and let them in into the program and see what we're really about behind the scenes.
Yeah, this is something that you and I have been talking about, trying to get going. So excited that we're finally able to get it going. And we get it going right as you guys have begun summer one. Tell us about the team that is here currently. I know there's some guys that aren't on campus just yet, and what their excitement level is to be a part of this program.
Yeah. Jay, I always struggle with speaking about the new guys, because if you say anything positive, then people spin that to create negative connotations about the guys that are not here. And it's not fair to anybody, the new guys or the old guys. This new moment that we're in, that's one of the topics that you and I eventually going to speak about, this moment that we're in college athletics and transfers and so forth. It's the new normal, at least for the present moment. So having a bunch of new guys is something that we all have to get used to and figure out a way to manage it and handle it the right way to give the university what it deserves, a first-class basketball program and a winning experience to the players and everyone on campus and everyone that supports our program. But we've got five of our incoming guys on campus. By the end of the week, we should have 7. And by the 20th of the month, we should have everybody here. The reason for that is graduation dates. People graduate at different times. And, guys can't be on campus until they officially graduate from high school and yada, yada, yada. And I'm really excited. The returning guys are here. Credit to them, man, because they just finished the semester academically on the 25th. Right before Memorial, right before Memorial Day. I'm sorry, and then turn around 5 days later and back on campus. So it's credit to those guys, the commitment that they've made to help us build this program and to do everything in their power to make us relevant again.
We'll have plenty of time this summer to talk about all these individuals. And when you mention guys that can't come here yet because they still are in high school, I think people in New England understand that high school can go into late June because of all the snow days, obviously, that we generate here. But having those returning guys, be right back and be in the gym. And, one guy I wanted to touch upon, I think, because at the end of last season, it felt like Wildens Levesque might have been banged up. I know he had some surgery throughout the offseason here. And it was up in the air. Will Wildens be coming back to UMass? And the answer is yes. And so I guess the question to you is, what is that relationship like for you and him that runs so deeply that he's decided to make that decision?
He's an unbelievable human being, first and foremost. He and I have been on this journey together for 4 years. To that crowd that's out there, which for 40 years have been trying to tell the world that I'm this maniac that nobody likes and, blah, 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 all that nonsense that ignorant people spew that don't know. Wildens is phenomenal. It's, I hurt for him last year and I coach him hard. Because he wants me to coach him hard. There's some guys I don't coach hard because they can't deal with being coached hard. And so I got to coach them differently. Wildens wants to be coached hard. That's the part in coaching that, I had somebody ask me one time, a media person said, you always talk about education and teaching your math classes and how much you miss that. Did you yell at your math students? I said, no. So why do you yell at basketball players? Number one, I didn't recruit my students. They were assigned to me. So it's a different relationship. And number two, my students are with me for 180 days. My players are with me for a lifetime. So there's a commitment that we need from each other to find success in the journey that we're in together. Whether people like it or not, teachers aren't getting fired based on how many students graduate. Coaches, we don't keep our jobs if we don't win. Players, their dreams are shattered if they are not held accountable and taught how to be successful. So Wildens comprehends all that. So he struggled with his knees were killing him all year. And actually, he still hasn't been cleared. He had a procedure done 5 days after the season ended. He's doing a little light jogging and stuff right now. But I felt for him, man, because he wants to represent his home state, school. Every time he takes the court, this place means a lot to him, not just the university, but the state. Yep. And he's got his heart surrounded by the name of his family and the name of where he's from. And he takes that serious and it means the world to him. And he couldn't play to the level he wanted to play. Most people immediately correlate that with statistics. That has nothing to do with it. It's about representing a style of play, a personality, the courage to do things a certain way to elevate the people you're with. And he couldn't elevate his teammates, which is something that he strives to do. So I'm excited that he's back with us for another year.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I can think of some games that just defensively his presence there changes what the other team is able to do or trying to do. You know, you mentioned kind of the way that you coach. Where does that stem from? Like your origin story as a coach who is very animated and can be a guy that is hard on players that want to be coached up.
That's what life was like when guys like me, you know, my generation, when we were kids, that's how it was. You you were held accountable. I'm not saying that yelling is part of being held accountable. No, it's all different. But Jay, I grew up in South Florida, and it was back then, I guess the early 80s, I'm not going to say the network, but the four-letter network, basically, we didn't have basketball in South Florida.
Yeah.
But they used to play, they were just starting, and they'd play the Big East games. And as a young kid, you know, I'm in high school watching Big East basketball. We didn't have college basketball in South Florida. We didn't have pro basketball. We didn't know what it was like. And you're watching those games, and you'd have Rolly Massimino, Big John Thompson, Louis Carnesecca, P.J. Carlissimo, Jim Boeheim. Those are the guys that represented the Big East back then. Safe to say, every one of those guys had a personality. They were all different. They weren't scared to show who they were. And you know what they all did? They all stomped and yelled and held people accountable. That's the era I grew up in. And so that's who I am. I think I'm better now than I was back then when I first started in 1986. I think I'm better now than I was even 5 years ago. But at the same time, it's who I am, and I'm proud to be who I am. And I recruit these players. It's not like I show up to their house with cupcakes and all kinds of little board games, and we all kind of sit around and play patty cake and laugh and cheer. Then they show up, and I start yelling at them. No, it's you've been around me for a year now. I'm loud, and I'm in a good mood. When I'm celebrating, I'm loud, and when I'm laughing, I'm loud. It's who I am, and I'm not saying I'm perfect. I don't pretend to be perfect, but I am genuine, and I am wholesome, and I do. My players understand that I am who I am, and I'm doing everything I can to help them and be committed to their lives.
Yeah, I've seen that up close and personal, and I think that 30 for 30 that ESPN did on the Big East, I don't know if you ever saw it, was amazing.
Yeah.
And when people talk and dream about the old Big East, they talk about those types of coaches and those regional rivalries. Two things that I think are becoming less and less the norm in college sports these days.
Because back then, coaches made $60,000. So you were who you were. You weren't trying to portray a certain persona that the world thinks you should be, because you can get a job doing something else to make $60,000. But the salary number has changed. And because the salary number changed, now too many coaches are so protective of their salary. Because let's be honest, I don't know too many things that I can do in my life with what I'm trained to do where I can make the dollar figure that I've made for the last 12 years of my life.
Right.
And and so too many guys are worried about public persona because they're trying to create this whole mindset of who they are. And I'm not here to criticize others, man. Be who you are. I want, not because it's who I am, I want my kids to be held accountable. All three are athletes. And I want them wherever they end up playing. The only thing I ever say to coaches is all I need you to do is hold them accountable. I don't care how you do it. Hold them accountable. You want to yell at them, yell at them. If you want to have private meetings, whatever you need to do, hold them accountable. Don't let them slip. And we have to all do that in our own way, whatever way we feel comfortable doing it. But that's the biggest difference is those guys made no money back then. And so there's no – now we've created a cookie-cutter business where everyone has to dress a certain way, part their hair. That's why I don't fit in. I don't have any hair. We
get good shine though.
I just shaved it 2 days ago. At least I'm starting to shave my head again. I didn't shave my face, my head for 2 years. Now I'm starting to have to
show him back a little. That's
the problem. Positive just sign. A little. We need to come back a lot. That's what we need.
Coach, so on this podcast, you have created such a wealth of connections throughout the course of your career. We're going to be bringing on some of those folks as guests to talk about basketball, not just essentially UMass basketball, but the greater world of sports. And you had mentioned South Florida growing up as a kid. And now that South Florida not only has an NBA team, they've got a pretty darn good one in the NBA Finals that just beat the Boston Celtics, which ripped a lot of hearts out of fans here in New England. So let's go back to that series, Celtics versus the Heat, because I see you, I check in with you every once in a while here at the Champion Center, and you're out here holding court talking about, you know, just the game in general, and in this case, the Eastern Conference Finals. What was wrong with the Celtics those first three games? How do they make an adjustment to get back? And what happened in game seven? Digest that.
Well, what was wrong was the Celtics were in a dogfight with the Sixers while the Heat was sitting at home watching the Celtics play. So now the Heat was generating a game plan to go attack the Celtics offensively and defensively. And then the bottom line, the Celtics were up double digits in game one and game two in the second half. And they just ran out of steam. I don't know. I'm not in their locker room, so I don't pretend to understand what dynamics or challenges they're battling. But it's NBA playoff basketball. Here's the whole narrative. There's two things that I kind of find amusing. I hear talking heads talking about that Joe Mazzulla was intimidated in coaching his players. I don't pretend for Joe to be my best friend, but we know each other, and he played for one of my closest friends in life in Bob Huggins. Joe Mazzulla would fight two grizzly bears just for the heck of it. So him worried about people's feelings, I know is not part of the equation. So people that go in that conversation, I just get a kick out of that ignorance that's spewed by people who have no clue. But then the other part is, the Heat was a number one seed the year before.
Yeah.
They had the same team intact. But the part everyone wants to talk about undrafted players. The reason the undrafted players have developed and are prepared for the moment, the Heat missed more player games than any team in the NBA in the regular season, or third most, excuse me, than any team in the regular season. So there's a reason they came in as an 8 seed. And they obviously have found their stride at the right time of the year in the playoffs. And the Celtics shouldn't be. Hey, think about this, Jay. The Heat was in the finals 3 years ago. They beat the Celtics to get there. Then they were an early out in the playoffs the second year. Then they went in last year as the number one seed, and they're back in the NBA finals. Did they blow up their roster because of the failures the previous years?
No.
Did they fire their coach because of the failures the previous years? It's the same group of guys. They've allowed them to continue to deal with adversity and grow, and that's how you get good.
It's funny because, you know, we are in the Boston media world here, so you hear a lot of the criticisms. And, you know, fans fire off from the seat of their pants and are emotional in the heat of it all. But if you look back at how a lot of these teams get to the championship, fail, get to the championship, fail, and then finally overcome and beat the Pistons, for instance, and go on to the NBA Finals, or in this case, you know, now the Celtics trying to get over that hump. That's the method almost, is to get a group of guys, get there, fail, and then ultimately succeed.
That's it. And you don't win because of the new guys. You win because of the scars of the old guys. Now, those old guys that are scarred, the ones that are worth, I mean, some guys run away from it. Now, you don't want those guys in your locker room. If that's who you got in your locker room, then you got to blow it up. And that's the part. I don't know that. But I don't pretend. I'm not a name dropper. That's not my thing. But there's some people I know personally. I know Marcus Smart personally. I tell people all the time.
He was at a game this year, wasn't he? Didn't he come?
I don't know if he came this year or not. His high school coaches are dear friends. I recruited him really hard. I was at one of their games, and he and I communicated publicly because he wasn't playing that game. But go look at the Celtics record when Marcus Smart does not play, which, by the way, is few and far between. The guy answers the bell every single time. And he's about all the right things. There's a reason everywhere he goes, the team he's on all of a sudden becomes a winner consistently. So you don't win by getting rid of that courage, because he's going to continue to grow. Is he perfect? No, but the reason his teams win has a lot to do because of him. Well, you've added high character people, Jason Tatum, Brown, Al Horford. Those are high character dudes. Man, you don't get better by getting rid of high character people. You don't do that. You get better by adding to high character people. So now you got the high character guys that have been scarred through failure and success. They got to grow. And now you got to add to that, man. And the new guys add to that scar. But those scars that you've created internally, that because of character you're willing to grow from, those are the reasons you overcome difficult moments, not by blowing things up and starting from scratch.
You had mentioned to me, you had asked me what I thought the biggest addition, transition was, adjustment was for the Heat when they ultimately won Game 7. Mm-hmm. I didn't have an answer for you, but you had told me the putting Jimmy Butler at the 5 was a big difference. And he's not a 5 guy, right?
No.
So how do you as a coach make that determination to say, I'm going to put a guy who maybe isn't a 5, but I think he can do something defensively to slow these guys down?
Yeah, I mean, Game 7 was a tale of two stories. Number one, the Celtics have two guys that score in the paint. Two, Jason Tatum, and I'm losing his the sixth man of the year. Come off the bench. Malcolm Brogdon. Those are the two guys that get in the paint and score. That's it. They don't have anyone else that scores in the paint. Well, Brogdon couldn't play with his form, and Jason Tatum rolled his ankle. He couldn't drive the ball. So now you've lost your two paint scorers. So you become have guys do stuff they're not good at to try and make up for those losses, and then become a standstill contested three-point shooting team. And then the second part, which goes back to winning. You know, Jimmy Butler, everyone says the great players, look at that shot. Look at this shot. He made this shot. Jimmy Butler became a screener in Game 7. They played him at the 5, and he started screening. That's all he did was screen. He didn't score. He screened. And the Heat, Duncan Robinson, because you got Jimmy Butler screening, it took the Celtics drop coverage where they were protecting all the curl cuts and slips and all that by keeping their centers standing in the middle of the paint. It made their centers have to come out, because once those cuts took place, Jimmy Butler would stand back. They'd hit Jimmy Butler. Now you got a playmaker with the basketball. And I thought that was a big adjustment. They hadn't done that all year.
Yeah,
but that's the beauty of playoff basketball when you got winners in your organization. If you're blowing it up because they don't succeed and you got bad character, I get it. When you have good character, you don't blow things up, but you can make those kind of adjustments because of people's character.
Yeah, I guess you just kind of hit it there at the end. As a coach in those situations late in the season, for instance, how easy or difficult is it to change a game plan? And do you have to have the right players of a certain, caliber that can make those changes on the fly? That's something that maybe they haven't done all year.
Well, it's your organization has to be connected at the hip. And now we go back to your first question. What's the only way you get connected at the hip? Not just success, but also failure. Your players learn that you're a stand-up dude as a coach, because when you fail or you make bad decisions, you own it. And you go through those moments together. You don't throw people under the bus. You don't come into a team meeting and blame people. You come in and figure out a way to take ownership on your mistakes as a coach, and then create a mindset of what takes to succeed differently. And obviously the Heat, because they didn't blow up their team, they've been on that journey. That's why I gave you the whole timeline. Jimmy Butler's first year, they're all getting to know each other. They're all really young. They go to the finals and lose. Then they're a first round out in the playoffs the next year. And then they're a number one seed. Failure, failure, failure at the end. However, a lot of scars and growth and generating trust. So now you get because you've been around your team as a coach and your players understand where you what you believe in. When you walk into that locker room and say, okay, man, we got to make this adjustment for the game because this is what I think we need to do to win. And I feel in my heart that this is going to make give us a better opportunity to win. Your players go fight for you. If it's a brand new relationship, the players will do it, but they're not as committed because they're trying to figure out if you're a man of your word and if you're going to own things or you're going to deflect and blame. And but that's a journey that organization's been in together, top to bottom. There's no inconsistencies with communication. For example, I don't know what happened in the middle of the year. I don't know Jimmy. Jimmy played for one of my dear friends in Buzz Williams in college. I know what he's about. He's a winner. He's a consummate competitor. But I do know Udonis Haslam. And there was some situation this year where there was a dispute on the bench between Spoelstra and Jimmy, which happens, by the way. We're grown men full of testosterone.
You're the idiots, yes.
In a competitive world where we understand that for our individual success, we have to sacrifice for our team to win. Think about that. We don't have to do more. We have to sacrifice for our team to win. And in that world, sometimes sacrificing gets uncomfortable for people that are great at what they do. But Haslam jumped right in and said, no, man, this is the Miami Heat. We ain't doing that one. And I know what Udonis is about. I know who he is. I know where he stands for. So when he intervenes in that moment, it had nothing to do with being a tough guy. It had to do with like, hey, man, I've been here for 20 years. This organization doesn't function that way. We haven't had the success we've had because of that. And as you can see, everyone understood that, and that got in the rearview mirror, and the team grew because of it. But it grew because it's been together. They don't run away from each other. They don't blame each other. They figure out a way. Like Jimmy, he was doing an interview. I can't remember. I think it was after the Game 7 win. And he was talking about Kevin Love. Kevin Love didn't play the last two or three games of the series. Kevin Love is like a pro's pro, like a veteran, and there was no complaining. He was out there leading the cheers for Caleb Martin, who played his rear end off against the Celtics. But that's what winning is all about.
Lastly here for you, when you apply that thought process to younger kids in a college basketball program, how do you make that ask of them to say, hey, maybe you're not going to play, but we still need you for these things? And do kids rise to that challenge and occasion?
Yeah, I rarely speak to players as to why they don't play. I speak to them as to what they need to do to help us by play. That's where my angle of conversation always comes from. I know there's some coaches that they do it the way you just mentioned, which is like, hey man, you're not ready to play, blah, 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 which is fine. That's the beauty. We're coaching people. We're not, if you go to the bookstore and you want to buy a book on leadership, there's more books on leadership than any other topic. You know why? Because we're all different. So
There's no right way to do it.
That's correct. That's why there's endless. So you're trying to figure out like what leadership works for me. You know which one? The one that you go deal with every single day and you learn and you take notes on yourself and you try things. And sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. But you're accountable. You don't run away from it. We're not machines, man. We're not computers. We can't lead that way. But the biggest hurdle we have to overcome in today's day and age is number one, we talked about the way I learned. That is irrelevant when I'm trying to teach an 18-year-old,
right?
My job is to understand how they learn. They don't adapt to me. I got to adapt to them. And once I adapt to how they learn, then they're willing to listen to what I have to say. And because whatever worked for me in 1983, come on, man. It's not going to work in 2023. There's no connection there.
Yeah, I think that's wise. Just saying, look, I'm the one that has to figure out ways to motivate you and then ultimately have success. Okay, so on this inaugural episode of Just Being Frank, and Frank, I'm glad that our conversations now, we'll put them out in the public here. You've been great in having these talks with me throughout the year. So really looking forward to talking and picking your brain on things throughout this upcoming season. I'm going to throw a topic at you on each one of these. And today just happens to be the 79th anniversary of the D-Day attack and really the beginning of the end of World War II. When you see that word D-Day or those that moniker, you know, what does that mean to you and what does it make you think of?
Well, if you know, when D-Day took place, my family had no idea that this was going to be their home. When D-Day took place, my family probably wasn't even paying attention to that conflict, even though it was a world conflict.
Right.
My family was farmers in Cuba, and they, you know, they had no fight in the game. You know, and so I can't speak for them, but that would be my assumption right away. But now you hit fast forward, and this became our home. And the courage of those folks that got off those boats and not knowing, we just talked about sacrificing, okay? And the courage of all them folks that and you know, came off them boats and walked onto them beaches. You think they were doing that for self-glory? You think they were doing that for social media likes and followers and all this nonsense? They were doing that so you and I can do a podcast in 2023. And we can come from two completely different places, different backgrounds, different walks of life, but be a part of the environment that this country gives us. And you know, I it's one of the things I told you when we said let's do this. I got political opinions. I keep those to myself. I don't even speak to my family about political opinions. That was my grandmother's. When I was a kid, my grandmother always said, don't ever talk politics or religion with anybody. She'd always say that to me. She said, be strong in your beliefs. And she was the backbone of our family. And she said, be strong in your beliefs, but don't ever speak about those two things. And she say, which was a very wise opinion, she says, and there's two things you never loan. You don't loan your car, you don't loan your wife. So it's a
wise lady.
Yeah, she was unbelievable. She kept her money in a shoebox. That's how.
Did you know where it was?
No. My uncle, her son, had to convince her that she had to open up a bank account so she can become a property owner. It's the life that she knew, but the courage of them folks that walked on that beach to take on a fight, knowing that there is a good chance that they're never coming home, and that they do it for people to speak their names individually. They did it because they wanted to sacrifice for the country that gave them an opportunity to live and to like I said, to allow you and I, 79 years later, to have a podcast where we can speak honestly with no barriers and express ourselves how we choose. It's a powerful moment. And when you're leading young people into sacrificing for success, that is the perfect moment and the perfect example to use.
Well said, Coach. We remember them fondly today and obviously on Memorial Day and every day. Just an amazing group of men and women on D-Day 79 years ago. Coach, that'll do it for us here on the first episode of Just Being Frank. This has been fun. We'll talk to you next week, all right?
Let's have a lot of fun with this, Jay. I'm excited.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much.
jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.